Welcome back to this Fashion Law dinner party. I hope you've topped up your glass of Prosecco because we're heading to a place where I love to have a glass, Via Tornabuoni in Florence. In part one of our conversation about archival authenticity, we talked to Sarah May Ettinger, the founder of the American luxury brand May, and to Serena Totino, a senior associate at K&L Gates. But no conversation about archives and authenticity in the context of fashion and design would be complete without someone from the Ferragamo universe. So, in this episode, I'm delighted to speak with Stefania Ricci, the director of the Museo Ferragamo and the Fondazione Ferragamo, and to engage with still other Italian stakeholders in this area.
Dottoressa Ricci, thank you so much for joining me today. I'm so excited to talk to you, and I've long been an admirer of your work at the Museo Ferragamo and at the archive, so it's really wonderful to have you. Thank you so much for being here. We've, especially in the United States, we've been seeing the advent of archivists in-house at fashion houses. And, you know, I always emphasize to my colleagues and even to archivists in the United States, you know, this has actually been happening in Italy for quite some time. And I always think of you as, you know, the archetype, as it were, of an in-house archivist, fashion preservationist and historian. You began working with Ferragamo in the early 1990s. Could you perhaps share a little bit about your career trajectory and how you began at Ferragamo and how you moved in-house?
Yes, I am an historian of art, and I started to work in the collection of Pitti Palace around fashion, even if I am a historian of art, not a historian of fashion. And I began to work about the new exhibition, and I had the opportunity also to make the catalog of the donation of Umberto Tirelli. There were 150 different clothes, and also accessories. And in the same style, I started to work for a new project with Salvatore Ferragamo. The project was about an exhibition that started in 1985. And after the experience of the exhibition of Yves Saint Laurent in Metropolitan Museum in 1983, it was really the first exhibition in Europe where a fashion company presented its products like piece of art. And we started with the story of the founder, Salvatore Ferragamo, and the collection was very important because there were 200 different shoes, all handmade pieces like artworks. I started to work to organize the archive. I was very lucky because the first archivist was Salvatore Ferragamo, that he collected the prototypes, some shoes, documents, letters, but of course there was not an organization like in a museum or an archive. And so was the first experience to have an archive, a fashion archive. And also it was the first experience to have a fashion museum related to a fashion company. And we are really like a pioneer. And so it was not easy to understand if the public could answer to this idea. And we had no idea of the number of visitors, but it was really a wonderful experience. And very important because of course, we made some mistakes at the beginning, of course, but we were able to understand very well the organization of the archive, how to use the archive, and how to help the company, the new collection, and also the legal department, the communication department, through the organization of everything that is collected inside the Ferragamo archive.
What is the difference, in your view, between the Ferragamo Archive and the Ferragamo Museum? How is it that the museum and the archive interact with other departments at Ferragamo on a day-to-day basis, if you will?
Of course, we have a special archive because We open also the archive to visitors, students, or group of students, or people that are interested in history of fashion. But of course, the first visitors are our colleagues of different departments, because they start from the archive before any collection, and inside they can receive many ideas also for the communication or for events. When there are some problems with the legal department, with other companies, of course, it's important to have all the documentation inside our archive. So the first people that are interested in the archive are the company. But the museum is another story, because of course we open to normal visitors. We have a lot of visitors every day, and they are not only fashion students or people interested in Ferragamo and interested in fashion, but many of them are tourists or general public that they want only to see our exhibition, because for a long time we made also special exhibitions starting from a chapter of the history of our founder of the company, and try to improve a special subject to try to arrive to investigate also the connection with the contemporary period. And for example, we made some years ago an exhibition about sustainable thinking, starting from a group of shoes made during the war by Salvatore Ferragamo with recycled materials, with cellophane and with a poor material. And it was a very important exercise. So this is different. And of course, the museum is very important for the authenticity of the brand, and also for the reputation, because it's a part of a social balance.
You bring up a word that is really a key word for this episode, which is authenticity. Especially for lawyers who are working in fashion, this notion of authenticity is important when we think of trademark rights and other IP rights. But of course, authenticity is a broad notion that encompasses heritage too. So I'm really curious to know, how do you, as the director of the Ferragamo Museum, and of course the point person for the archive with your staff, how do you define authenticity?
Authenticity, show to our consumer, but not only to our consumer, to the press, to the normal public, that each storytelling of our company is a real based on a real document, a real story. There is no invention, there is not only a fairy tale, but there is a real story. This is the first point, of course, that I think is very important. And it is the demonstration also in the system of I and all people that work with me. We organize the exhibition. We try to go very deeply inside the subject of our exhibition, involving also the specialists of other studies or historian. And it depends on the different argument of the exhibition, is a proof that of the quality of the company, of the quality process, and also there is is like a mirror on the each aspect of the Ferragamo brand.
Historical facts, right, links to other disciplines, and really interesting too that there's a true connection with the quality of the Ferragamo brand too, a commonality between authenticity in the archive and museum and the authenticity for the brand itself.
And there is also another aspect, as the importance of heritage, because we can show how the archive, the story, especially for company that have a long life, is the demonstration to be on the market for a long time. And also we can show a real identity, a special identity that is very important to have a special special aspect towards the public, that Ferragamo has some values, and these values are related to its past and the history of the founder.
I always think of Ferragamo as a first mover there, which brings me also to the current exhibition you have on display at the museum, because it very much is related to these points and to the heritage of the brand itself, and if I might say so, the heritage of the museum.
We decided to have again an exhibition about Salvatore Ferragamo, because there were more than 38 years from the first exhibition. And the exhibition of today is totally different, because the first, the pieces were exhibit like a piece of art without any connection or very small connection with the history of Italy, of the relationship with the United States, and so on. In this case, we wanted to show all the work that we made with the museum and also with inside the archive, and all the material that we found in these years, thanks to the different exhibition, and we wanted to show documents, photos, the story, and also the different aspect of the Ferragamo brand. So the relationship with cinema and celebrities, the importance of material, the inspiration related to history of art, or also related to the Florentine tradition in craftsmanship, and also all the work that Ferragamo made on the anatomy of the foot, on the comfort for the shoes, and the innovation through the patents, because in these years we found 369 patents made by Ferragamo starting from 1929. And also how the craftsmanship is always related to, in one side, to the tradition of craftsmanship in Florence and in Italy, on the other hand, is related to innovation, in the new idea of how to renovate, in any case, the tradition. The color that is very important in this exhibition. We wanted to show the different colors of Ferragamo. So it's like we wanted to summarize all the results that we obtain in these different years through the different exhibition, and also through the work that the Ferragamo Foundation made, because we have two different sections. The museum is connected with the company. The foundation was founded by the Ferragamo family to support the company, but also to save the archive and to maintain the historical value, and to try to translate this value to the new generation in education program.
We operate now in a spectrum of culture and commerce, and to have these offices or branches of the extended company that really are about historical preservation and recognizing the artistic value of what's in, you know, the company archive through the foundation, as you mentioned, is really, I think, so unique and so forward looking. And the links you mentioned between innovation and craftsmanship are also, you know, at the foundation of fashion and luxury. But of course, from a legal standpoint, we tend to want to categorize them into different rights. And so often it's challenging for us. We have to think about seeing them holistically. So I'd like to just touch on, because you mentioned it, and I have not had the pleasure of visiting the exhibit yet. I really hope I can visit it in the near future. But I saw that one of the parts of the current exhibition has walls devoted to these patents that you mentioned that Salvatore Ferragamo received. And it has a copy of the patent and then the actual prototype on the wall. So you mentioned that there are over, you know, 369 patents. Could you share a little bit about, you know, at that time period in the mid-2000s, what was the spark for an exhibition that was so devoted to, you know, innovation and, if I may say so, law and Ferragamo?
And Ferragamo was really an innovator. So all the people that are going to see now, to see the exhibition, we have a lot of people and the young people, and probably many designer or new designer, or also designer, shoe designer of other companies. And it's the demonstration that Ferragamo invented everything. So to see in one space a collection of so many ideas in terms of shape, in terms of construction, in terms of material, I think that is a wonderful experience. And I think that is a very good gift that the family and the Ferragamo company is making to the others, other people, and to the young generation.
I think it's very inspiring. And when I teach, I talk about this with my students too. Often, you know, when you see a luxury boutique, you might feel a little hesitation into entering, right? Even though, of course, yes, you should enter, and we all want, you know, luxury brands want people to enter. But it, a museum, especially like the Ferragamo Museum, breaks down barriers for so many people who might think that luxury and even fashion is not really for them. And yet, if you enter the museum and you see the backstory of the innovation, you see materials that Ferragamo touched or that are part of the corporation's history, it of course gives you a different view onto the brand and who it's for.
And there is also, in my personal opinion, in so many years of experience, that the fashion exhibition, they have a very important task to make education that in the backstage of any construction of one accessory or one dress, there is a lot of work in terms of ideas, in terms of innovation, in terms of also of the craftsmanship of many people, in terms of research of new material on old material in one way. I think that it's important to show to the public that is very deep field, because sometimes we have an experience either the fashion exhibition only on surface, only the image. And I think that is not a good result to say when you are out from this exhibition, oh, I like this dress or another dress, because they're not the same things of a shop, it's not the same things of a window. So there are different contents, and the message is totally different. If you want to have a museum, if you want to have an exhibition of a fashion company, it's important to share with the public all the work that is in the back, and also the work of many people in different fields.
And one thing that I've also been struck about, of course, as we've seen Ferragamo go through this rebrand under Maximilian Davis, is how technology and, you know, the work of your archive really help consumers and then the general public to see these layers of design that Maximilian Davis is citing from the history of the brand, whether it's, you know, the 18 karat sandal, or in fact the rainbow sandal, which you mentioned, you know, before reimagined.
So of course there is we want to respect freedom of the designer, and also the freedom of creativity. But of course, if you work for Ferragamo, it's important to know very well the story, the archive, to try to make like a translation of the same concept, the identity, in a new way, connecting with the idea of the new designer.
On this point of freedom of the new designer, obviously this new exhibition at the museum, I'm always struck by how contemporary designs that draw from Ferragamo's past seem to be more impactful for Ferragamo consumers and, of course, seem to raise awareness of the archive and the museum. But what are some of the future plans?
We are working a lot with this exhibition course. It's important also for us because we understand through this exhibition that the people, not only the consumer, the public, understand very well the value of this brand. And I think that is important also for the rebranding, because the demonstration to have a very, the basement is very solid and is very important. Of course, it's important to go towards new market, a new generation, but it's the only problem of communication. It's not a problem of contents. It's a problem only of language. But I am very confident that there is a wonderful future for our work, because we are more and more connected with the public. We are working really like a normal institutional museum. We have a lot of people that come to see our exhibition each year. And so we are working now in this period, especially to try to go towards more public and especially young generation. And now we are obtaining already some results, because we have a lot of school of students that are interested, not only to the shoes, but to the story of the man. Because the story of Ferragamo is a wonderful story, and it is a demonstration that even if there are in the life many difficulties, you can go on if you have a determinate idea and you have a real passion and you want to go on.
But of course, I'm always selfishly so inspired when I think about Ferragamo, and my conversation with Dottoressa Ricci is just one example of how the Ferragamo Museum, in fact, really represents best practices in the field of museums affiliated with brands and fashion companies. There is a tendency to think about fashion museums from a superficial standpoint, and even archives, and maybe even authenticity from a superficial standpoint, seeing the image of fashion, or, you know, maybe in some senses equating museums with shops or shops with museums, and overlooking the differences between fashion as something we wear and as a work of art. But of course, we increasingly live in a world where the divides, and here I go back to the first example I gave as part of the introduction to this podcast, of the recreations of historic Ferragamo shoes, are not easy to identify in fashion. We increasingly live on a spectrum, if you will, of commerce and culture. And so one of the things that I'm always curious to know is if we can think from a theoretical point of view about differences between culture and commerce, differences between marketing and scholarship. So to explore some of these questions, I talked to Matteo Gello, who is the author of Curating Italian Fashion, Heritage, Industry, and Institutions.
I was interested on one hand to understand, to explain how thriving the curatorial Italian landscape is, especially considering the central role that Italy plays in the global fashion industry. And then on the other hand, I was always asking myself, is there an Italian fashion curation? Like, can I talk about that? Can I talk about Italianness? And having experienced also a very strong relation between scholars, or I would say scholarship and industry, these are the two terms that I use a lot in the book, I wanted to kind of unfold that and follow the hints and the clues that I had in my professional life, but from a more rigorous way in my PhD. What one thing to consider is that archives are, all companies need to have archives because they need them for their operations, they need them for their tax records. So to have a historical archive as we intend it today, as a collection of pieces that were produced and that are used to tell a story, you know, this is something that is way more recent and it's kind of functional to undertaking heritage promotional projects. But at the beginning, companies had to keep a lot of their records, and some companies were more understanding of their own contribution to the arts, and so had an archive of their process. I've also worked on the archive of the House of Worth, which started in the 1880s, taking photographs of the garments that they were producing in London at the Archive of Arts and Design. There are 8,000 pictures of everything that was produced, well, many things that were produced by the House of Worth from the 1880s to the 1950s, actually. So they had a sense of the importance that I know that what we are doing here perhaps is important, or maybe we will need to know everything that we've made. So it actually dates back a lot more. And for textile companies, they were collecting textiles for inspiration. It was part of their creative work. And we got, for example, there is one company called Chavin Père et Fils. It's a Lyonnaise manufacturer that started around the 1860s. Now I'm working on reconstructing their history, because their sample books are at the Ratti Foundation. But they got there because those sample books were then, the company was acquired by Brochier, which was another textile manufacturer in Lyon in the 1950s. And then Ratti acquired Brochier in the 1990s. And together with that, they acquired the archive, hence the sample books. And in the collection, we actually found that there were 18th century textiles that had belonged to Chavin Père et Fils. So a 19th century company was already collecting 18th century textiles that were used for inspiration because of the revival of that taste in the second part of the 19th century. So it wasn't a historical preservation interest, you know, that there was a commercial purpose to having these historical collections, if you may call them that.
Given all the extensive research you've done in different archives both of, I would say, companies that are still fashion companies that are still very much in existence, and others like, you know, the House of Worth, which have not been revived, could you talk a little bit about, in your, you know, definition, what is authenticity in the fashion industry, and how it relates to archiving and separately to curating?
Well, I think authenticity, the way that I use that concept is how consumers or how other players are viewing or are perceiving a particular company or the work of a particular company. So authenticity from a reception perspective. So how can we judge what is authentic? And with Italy, was fundamental to talk about authenticity, because Italianness in itself, or Italian identity, is very recent, and has been recently constructed in the 20th century primarily. And when it comes to Italian fashion, we would say from the 1900s and afterwards. So authenticity is used to describe, to sell a sense of Italianness to foreign brands. I've applied it particularly to this case, because the American market in particular in the 1950s, that was the main market for Italian goods. And the way that marketing was constructed, that the garments were even conceived sometimes, was to talk to a specific audience who had an idea of Italianness that was perhaps not the one that Italians had, who had a much more fragmented understanding of their own identity. And therefore, the authenticity for that audience is very different to what would be perceived as authentic in Italy, something that is the same for all of the 20 region in this country would not be perceived authentic. You know, it's the lack of regional differences that would go against authenticity in Italy, whereas for the other market, authenticity was linking the products and the brands to some recognizable traits that have been historically associated with Italian culture and society. First reflection, we could say, on some kind of Italian fashion is attributed to a couturier, Rosa Giannoni, at the very beginning of the 20th century. And at the 1906 International Exhibition in Milan, she presented a collection of Italian fashion, which were garments inspired by works of Renaissance art. And 120 years have passed, and we are still connected to the Renaissance, which is a Florentine affair. It was an affair connected to some other country, but in Apulia, the heel of Italy, we don't talk about Renaissance. There are other eras that are associated with that. So that alone shows this construction of authenticity. There is definitely a pattern here, and companies are playing effectively to it. The question then is, can we move forward? What else could be done? Dolce & Gabbana are using the same approach, and whether you like or not, how are they doing that? They have a particular taste that is fairly camp, I would say. But they are exploring different regions and different cities in Italy. So they're kind of at least going a bit of outside of Florence and the Renaissance. I don't know if you saw that Vogue Italia recently had been dedicating issues to different cities. So they had Naples, they had Palermo, and they are also now looking at regional differences within, well, actually local and city-focused differences in Italy. So kind of, I mean, it's Vogue Italia, so it's directed at, we could say, Italian audiences, but they are exploring other parts of Italian heritage. But that glamorization and marketing through history, through location, and through a lifestyle has always been there and still remains the same.
How do you uniquely, you know, think in light of your book, especially, that we should consider the differences between marketing and the historical record in order, especially as consumers, to identify what is authentic? I mean, do you think that it, and sometimes it doesn't matter? I mean, does it, in archival design, for example, like what Sabato di Sarno, you know, took from the archive and recasted in this new Ancora Red, I mean, that seems to be authentic for consumers. The archive there makes a difference on the market. It's not really a scholarly work, but it's more marketing, and it makes a difference. What are your thoughts there in on that dichotomy, if you will?
I mean, I think designers cannot always draw from archives. My reflection on terms of scholarly or commercial is related to exhibitions in particular, and on projects that are focused on the heritage and in presenting the history of a brand rather than products that, even though they may be strongly rooted in the heritage, are nevertheless new products for the now. That, you know, it's presenting the past, you could say. But archives are biased. All archives are biased. And I've also worked in public institutions and very renowned, such as the Victoria and Albert Museum here in London, and there are equally very strong ties with sponsors, with donors, with multiple stakeholders. And so the sense that one place is more rigorous than another or is more trustworthy than another, I always questioned. I think they have different principles by which they run. And it's important that companies, that institutions or companies and brands declare their intent, and so people have the tools to judge how they are operating, but rather than saying, you know, this place we should trust and this other we don't. Museums, particularly in Europe, are very much rooted in a 19th century colonial grand exhibition tradition, and there was a commercial intent there as well. The V&A kind of come from the Great Exhibition in 1851 as well, and it was intended to inspire contemporary production. So I think that this awareness that the scholarly and the commercial were always went hand in hand in the history of museums, and that there were always political agendas in constructing a sense of heritage at the end of the 19th and beginning of the 20th century, it's important to then kind of relieve some of the pressure of corporate institutions. I'm not trying to pardon very cheap marketing projects. I think that a lot of the time I see exhibitions by brands, and I think, is this their best way to spend all of your resources? You talk about sustainability, but then you spend £10 million to make an exhibition here in London that is also ticketed, and you could have really done a lot more and have a greater impact in terms of corporate social responsibility with those £10 million. All archives have a bias, as I was saying. So the idea of authenticity, to me, is one needs to be cautious in how one defines authenticity. And in order to define that, they need to reflect on how are objects collected, are objects being collected, how is this part of the market? There are lots of studies on how national institutions, for example, collect, or how individuals collect. With these other companies, it's also problematic. Well, not problematic, it's not disclosed, because they're what I found, a couple of people might have a clear idea. We need to have a policy statement, a collecting policy manifesto. This is how we collect, this is what we keep, this is what we discard. But most of the time, is if someone is going to buy this garment, we are selling it, especially if you're at the beginning. So there are incongruences in a commercial practice that then should have a collecting policy for their archive, but then also there are other priorities. And because of this difference, then the archive as a physical container of records, whether they are a physical document or object, is an imperfect one. And the imperfection is made of many choices that can't be reconstructed, because very often they are made by daily choices, but sometimes even, you know, anecdotes of that sort. So it's also important to understand that the authenticity, that the imperfection is part of that authenticity, and that we need to manage limitations and the impact of these limitations on what an archive can represent and can do for a company.
One of the things that struck me about my conversation with Matteo was how nuanced authenticity is, how nuanced the nature of authenticity is. It's imperfect. Authenticity is also, can be at times, culturally contingent. And culture and commerce serve to inform our notion of authenticity. In some senses, culture, of course, serves commerce. If we think of the examples of Rosa Giannoni's use of the Renaissance and other Italian touch points in her first collection to present an Italian fashion. But commerce can also become culture. Italian fashion brands have really, when Italian institutions might have been a little reticent, started to preserve their corporate heritage. And so their heritage becomes of interest to a wider community, even beyond their consumers. Italy and Italian brands, of course, don't have a monopoly on fashion's wider cultural interest. One of the principal moments that seemed to spark fashion brands' contemporary interest in archiving their own products was the Metropolitan Museum of Art's Costume Institute's exhibition dedicated to Yves Saint Laurent during his lifetime in the early 1980s. And living designers are still on display at the Met. You've probably seen this if you've been to one of the Met's exhibitions. In fact, one of the current designers you'll often see in the Costume Institute's exhibitions is Tom Brown.
As an established American luxury brand with an extensive archive, Thom Browne, the brand, provides a fitting bookend, I thought, to our conversation about archival authenticity, which began in New York with Sarah May Ettinger and her brand May. So don't miss part three of this conversation when I have a really insightful conversation with Tiani Graham, Thom Browne's principal archivist and a sophisticated curator of fashion in her own right.